This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Nancy Beckman, you've lived here quite a long time.
I have. I actually moved here 17 years ago to take the job as the president and CEO of Visit Lodi.
Talk to us about what you're most proud of. If I was just spending a day here, what would we do? Where would you want to take me?
Our claim to tourism fame is our wineries. I mean, I've been here 17 years and I've seen us go from 8 wineries to 85. And not just, our wineries here are producing amazing wines that can keep company with the best wines in the world.
I think what's really interesting about the Lodi wine world, it goes back over 100 years or more. And it was, even before it reinvented itself, one of the major top producers of wine grapes in the whole state of California.
That's true. We are the largest appellation in the state of California. We currently have about 190,000 acres. Years ago, all of the amazing fruit was being shipped over the hill to Napa and Sonoma. And then years ago, our wine grape growers decided that they could preserve the family farm, they could vertically integrate, they could open up tasting rooms, produce their own wine, and be better for it.
I read just the other day that Lodi was like the number 2 rated wine region in America. What was that about?
That was USA Today.
That's pretty cool. That's just right now, right? This was recently.
That was just literally, they came out with that just a couple of months ago. USA Today came out and they did a reader poll, actually, is what it was. They had people weigh in on their favorite wine, on their favorite wine region in the United States, and Lodi came in number 2.
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
You know, in 2015, Lodi was named Wine Enthusiast, Wine Region of the Year out of the entire world.
Okay, and so you already knew it was there. Yeah.
So the only thing that shocked me was that we came in number 2 as compared to number 1.
Oh, how funny. I love it.
Yep.
I always love the story of 7 deadly sins. That's a great story.
It is a phenomenal story. And that was probably a good, I bet you they first made that 15, 16 years ago, I'm guessing. Michael David came out with that, and it just took off like gangbusters. And that grew Michael David literally as an overnight sensation. They went from producing a small lot of that each year, just growing that wine exponentially.
And I think the inside story that's just hilarious is, self-admittedly, they say it wasn't even, oh my God, wine at the time. It was the cuteness of the label that people could not resist buying it because of the name. And then when it went viral, then they had to start making it awesome, which they have done.
They have done that. And they are really, truly not only great winemakers, but they are amazing marketers. You know, you don't always see that. When you get growers who are now producing their own wines, that doesn't necessarily make them great marketers. And Michael David has always had their pulse on marketing ingenuity.
And I think you're right. Of all the wineries I've been to in California, what stands out in my mind is the brilliance of their marketing. And they're very upfront about it, that their wine, whatever it is, has to have an, oh my God, gotcha label on it.
And they do. Yeah. They have Freak Show, which is phenomenally popular. They've got the 7 Deadly. So they've got that whole brand, their Inkblot label. A lot of people may not realize, too, that, you know, several years ago, Wine Enthusiasts named them. I believe that they were their number 1 or number 2 wine region, again, I mean, winery in the world.
That's crazy. Yeah, unbelievable.
Their Petit was like in their top 2 wines in the world.
And maybe it's my own personal bias, but where I think you guys excel at is reds.
You know what? What people, we do. I mean, people love our red wines. They really do. But what people don't realize yet is that we are so much more than Zinfandel. I mean, when you come to, I mean, that's what we cut our teeth on. That is, you know, the wine that Lodi is known for. But what people don't realize is that what we're producing now are all these really phenomenal Mediterranean Arome style varietals. So Tempranillo, Grenache, you know, obviously Syrah, Petite Syrah. They're getting so much recognition in the wine industry today.
And 10, 15 years ago, wasn't a player, right?
Mm-hmm. Wasn't a player. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, just the change in Lodi has been phenomenal.
Okay, so let's say we don't drink. We're teetotalers. Mm-hmm. But I still want to come to Lodi. Why should I come?
We have so many other things. We always say that we are wine plus. So we have, what people don't realize, is we have one of the greatest inland beaches. It's named by Sunset Magazine several years ago. We've got Lodi Lake that's fed where people can fish and swim and they can paddle boat there. It's fed by the McCollumy River and people, we have kayaking.
That's on the river.
That's on the river. Stand up paddling, which is just amazing.
Okay, cool. So we're going to head down to the dock. I'll have you guys spread out on the
Headwaters dock. Kayak Shop. And we're here with Dan Arbuckle. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Nice to meet you, Tom.
Yeah. So here we are in the middle of urban Lodi, and yet here's this picture postcard lake. That's pretty cool. And you take people out on the kayak here.
Yeah. We're pretty lucky to have this body of water in Lodi. It's our north border of town, and it's actually a dam section of river, so we've got about 10 miles of flat water to explore.
From here.
Yeah, so this is a lake, but if you look just downstream, you'd see the Woodbridge Dam, and that basically makes it a reservoir, so we can access the river from this lake, and we have miles and miles of flat water.
Oh, that's really cool. And the river is called?
The McCollumy River.
And that comes down out of the Sierras, right?
Right, yeah, down through Pardee, Lake Comanche, and then down to here, and this is the last dam before it goes into the Delta and out the Golden Gate Bridge.
So somebody came here and they wanted to go out kayaking. What's the process? Can you show up on your own, or is it you have groups or specific tour times, or how does it work?
Yeah, really all of the above. I mean, Lodi is kind of a hot spot for paddle sports. Anybody can come here any day and just launch from the Lodi Lake facility. And then we do multiple tours every week as well as rentals every day during the summer.
Tandem, is that pretty common, or most people like the solo?
It's kind of personal preference. We do two-man singles as well as three people in a canoe, or maybe if there's a family, we'll fit up to four. We also do paddle boats, stand-up paddle boards, and we have a giant five-person sup, which will accommodate five. It's actually the windiest river on the western slopes of the Sierra. So
really?
Yeah.
Wow. Very interesting. Tell us a little bit more about what you do and what you have, what you sell. Okay.
We have a full-service kayak shop, everything from $200 kayaks up to $5,000 kayaks. And we're really big on, if somebody wants to come try the sport, we have everything we sell available to rent or to demo. Somebody can come here and really get an education, try a bunch of different stuff, play Goldilocks, find out what works for them. And we're also big on experiences, tours like full moon paddles, sunset paddles, early morning wildlife paddles, women's only paddles. We try to have a lot of catered tours to meet our different audiences.
And how do people find out about that? They wanted to get on a full moon paddle, say.
Yeah, you just visit headwaterskayak.com. You can make your reservations and everything right there on the website.
And you guys come up with these events like a month or so in advance, with plenty of time to...
Yeah, for sure. So we have a newsletter that goes out as well as everything we do. We get posts on our Headwaters Facebook page. We promote a lot through our social media accounts. We have a YouTube subscriber channel, Instagram as well as Facebook.
Dan Arbuckle, this is your last chance. Anything you want to share?
I just think that if people think of Lodi as just a farm town or a winery town, they owe it to themselves to see this side of Lodi, because it really is one of the best flatwater paddling destinations in California. Very suitable for beginners to come out and learn the sport. And the highest caliber of knowledge and experience of any rental staff that I've seen in my 20 years of paddling.
Not bad. You're cool. Thanks again, Dan.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks for coming out, Tom.
And we we've really started to become known as a cycling destination. People love to come here and just ride their bikes through, you know, the county areas in the country and be able to see all the beautiful vineyards. And of course, we're just outside the foothills, so people are able to, if they are avid cyclists and they want to go have some elevation, they've got that, or they can ride flat.
Wayne Craig, you are a board member of
Visit Lodi Conference and Tourist Bureau.
I know you from back in the old days, and it seems like you're on a board of directors of a hospital here,
actually,
too, right?
Actually, I'm the CEO and president of the Lodi Memorial Hospital Foundation. We are a separate 501c3, but we raise funds for the hospital. And then I participate in a lot of hospital committees, so yeah, I'm up to my knees in the hospital. So,
how long have you lived in Lodi?
Since 1969, and I can't even count that far.
So old guys think you're a newcomer then, right?
Yeah, pretty much. There are some families that have been here for generations, and so they finally will say my name. You know, I'm just kidding. It's a very friendly town, but it does take a while to sort of get in rhythm with the town. So,
because this is an old community that's been multi-generational going back to the pioneer days.
Absolutely. In fact, you'll find that as you tour around Lodi, especially the wineries, you'll find that they're very family-oriented and that there's a lot of connection between many of the owners of various wineries and vineyards. And people share a lot here. They're very generous. And so it's just like a giant family. It's really a unique environment for this day and time in this country. It's still old school, but yet we're progressive here as well. We have a lot of things that are new and fresh. And
your economy is pretty vibrant. You were mentioning large manufacturer of armament.
Yeah, Armorstruck is here in town, and they make a lot of armor plating for the military and protect our troops. And that's owned by a company called Deedy Construction, or Deedy Companies, Steve Deedy and their family. And he's actually on my board, and so I know that pretty well. But he acquired the company a few years ago, and so that's just one of the diverse companies that are in town. Lodi is much more than just wine. However, with 85 wineries, we're known for the wine.
Wine excluded, what drives the community and its viability?
I think it's the conservative nature of the attitude and the culture here in town. It's the diversity. We have a large Sikh community. We have a large Hispanic community. We have a diverse ethnicity here that's been very...
Does that translate to your dining options downtown?
It certainly does. It certainly does. We have Cambodian restaurants, Thai restaurants. We have an Indian restaurant in town, as well as several of the traditional Mexican, Italian, Chinese restaurants. Yeah, I'd say Lodi is a culinary center, but with Bradley Ogden as a James Beard chef here at Wine and Roses and Rosewood, it's really, we also have a restaurant named Phoenix that has an excellent chef. There are a lot of good chefs in town, not just cooks.
Yeah, well, Bradley Ogden, he's a legend going way back in California.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. You
Absolutely.
Guys are so blessed to have him.
We really are. It was just a real frosting on the cake, so to speak, when he arrived in town. And he's integrated into our community so quickly. He volunteers for a lot of things. We do an event at the hospital called Summerfest, and we have 16 restaurants that come out. And when Bradley comes, the line is always at that tent. So
I believe it. I'd be there. A quick overview of the cool things. You were talking earlier about some of the cool things to do and see, right?
Okay,
here.
Yeah.
As a destination.
Well,
you know, we're over in the California coast, so yeah. It is a weekend getaway possibility, easy.
It is, and we find that Bay Area people love to come over here because we have a different climate, but we also have a different attitude. So there's obviously the 85 wineries, many of which, almost all of which now have tasting rooms. There's about 1,000 miles of waterways in the Delta. We have Lodi Lake that you can kayak and recreate on, with 4 miles of wilderness trails with over 200 bird species on those trails. We have the San Joaquin Historical Museum, which has remarkable history of the valley.
That's right in town?
It's just outside of Lodi in what's called Mickey Grove Park.
My name is Philip Merlo, and I am the Director of Education at the San Joaquin Historical Museum.
Hi, my name is Christina Swanson. I'm the Executive Director of the San Joaquin County Historical Society and Museum.
So as you guys know, I lived in the San Joaquin Valley quite a long time ago, so I'm very familiar with this area, but many people are not. This really is the food basket of the world.
San Joaquin County was first heavily settled by Europeans in the late 1840s during the gold rush. People that, having come to California for gold, realized that there was a lot of money to be made in agriculture and in trade. And so by the 1870s, you had massive wheat fields and grain fields that eventually evolved into a very large milling industry that was really spearheaded by Sperry Flour Mills. And the Sperry Flour Company was shipping wheat all across the Pacific world, to the Philippines, Japan, across the United States, across California. And that produced a lot of wealth for this region. In the 1870s, as the California Delta was really reclaimed as a result of really lots of financial capital from San Francisco with a combination of a large Chinese workforce.
So they did dams and dikes and drainage.
Dikes, levees, etc. Yeah. They were able to really transition this area from wheat and grain into the world's largest producer of fruits and vegetables.
And that remains so today?
Remains so today, yes. We remain one of the largest producers of almonds, tomatoes, walnuts. We are California's largest producer of strawberries. We do produce lots of beans, corn, rice. Historically, we've been famous for asparagus, although that has really died down in the past 20 years.
Why is that?
So asparagus is a crop that in California is very seasonally dependent. And in California, it can only be grown at certain times of the year. Whereas in other places across the world, for example, in Mexico, in Asia, they can actually grow it year-round. And so it's very hard to compete with their year-round economy.
And that has to do with temperature then, latitude?
Yes, temperature, latitude.
This also remains a huge producer of grapes from table grapes. Alan, tell us about back in the day and today.
Sure, that is correct. Lodi, its claim to fame was the flame tokay, which was a table grape. It's delicious. And it was grown extensively throughout the northern end of this valley.
It was the number one table grape in America, right?
That's correct, and that's, again, what put Lodi on the map. That crop has now changed. The seedless grape really made a big difference in what consumers find attractive. Nobody wants to deal with seeds anymore. So there went flame tokay, and enter the seedless red flame. And then the climate here, again, wonderful for grapes. We turned it into wine grapes, which now Lodi is becoming famous more so every year for the amazing varietals of wine that are being produced.
And I think it's only been in recent years where the new breed of winemakers have turned Lodi into one of the top wine growing regions in the world.
It really is. I think that you can look at the Napa wines and see where their grapes are actually coming from, and a lot of them are coming from here. Same thing with going up into the gold country, up into Amador and El Dorado. I think a lot of the varietals, particularly the Rhone varietals that do so well in that country, are also they're finding are doing very well down here, and some really high quality wines are being produced.
Right now, we're in the countryside outside of Lodi, and we are at an incredible facility. Talk to us about where we are at and what somebody could experience here.
Yeah, the San Joaquin County Historical Society and Museum. We are 18 beautiful acres in the middle of Mickey Grove Park. Mickey Grove is a regional park. It is part of the San Joaquin County system of parks. We are a nonprofit organization, and we maintain the county's collection. We have an amazing collection of artifacts, everything from the native peoples who are from here to the European settlers, and then on to all of these wonderful innovations in agriculture that we're sitting in the midst of right now.
But these are tactile, hands-on, real exhibits. We're out earlier, and there's a couple of the oldest house in the whole region, an incredible two-story home. Tell us about some of the objects and the homes that you towed in here.
We have several historic structures on site here. We have a schoolhouse from Calaveras County. We have the original Charles Weber House that sat at Weber Point in Stockton that was moved very painstakingly here to Mickey Grove Park.
Is that 1850s when it was built?
The cottage was built in 1849.
Okay.
And then we also have the house that Charles Weber built for his daughter, Julia, also on Weber Point in Stockton, which is here now, was moved here in 2001. It was built in 1878.
Yes.
And amazing work to get both of those structures here, amazing work for us to maintain them, and we're still in the process of renovating the Julia Weber house.
Well, and the building we're in right now, it has planters and harvesters, and some of them are pretty olden time into fairly modern.
Yes. So in the early 20th century, the agricultural economy here facilitated a lot of manufacturing. And so the first company in the world to produce harvesters and tractors, the Holt Manufacturing Company, was based here. And ever since that time period, there's been a culture of innovation that's helped to lead to new companies that are producing new types of harvesters, new types of combine tractors. And this particular building really takes you through the history of those different types of tractors through a timeline, and then lets you touch and look at and learn about the different types of things that they did.
This agricultural-based park is so big that I can't imagine that it's not also the site of the county fair. I mean, it's giant.
It actually looks like the site of a county fair. With the number of buildings that we have here, we absolutely recommend that people come here and spend the day. Bring a picnic. We do, unlike a lot of other museums, we encourage people to bring food in because we have, like I said, 18 acres. We have a beautiful nature trail that simulates what it would be like to come over the mountains through the redwoods and down into the delta. So it's not just a history museum. We really have a wonderful hands-on nature scene as well.
For further information, do you guys have a website?
We do. Please go to www.sanjoaquinhistory.org. And my name is Christina Swanson. I'm the executive director.
Yes, and you can find us on Facebook at the San Joaquin County Historical Museum and Society. Our page is very active. We respond quickly. And my name is Philip Merlo. I'm the director of education.
Thanks, guys.
It's a very large regional park that was donated by the Mickey family back in the day, and there's a small zoo there that's pretty amazing. It's a very tiny zoo, but we've had more golden lion tamarans born there than San Diego Zoo, and the same thing with pudus, which are the smallest deer in the world. So it's worth going to see. We have some other museums in town. We have the World of Wonders Children's Museum that used to be a joint venture with Exploratorium in San Francisco, but now is on its own. We have about 50,000 visitors a year that go through that. Downtown is lovely just to go be in. We have lots of restaurants, and then, of course, the gateway to Yosemite, to Lake Tahoe, to the Bay Area right here. So it's a great base camp.
How far to get up to Yosemite?
Yosemite is about, well, to the park itself is about 2 hours. It's another half an hour to get from the gate into the valley floor. Lake Tahoe is a little over 2 hours, 2.5 hours, depending whether you're going south or north shore. And then the Bay Area, downtown San Francisco, is an hour and 45 minutes away. It used to be an hour and 15. And the Delta is literally 5 minutes away. And so there's lots of boating and fishing and hunting in the Delta.
You could even base camp in Lodi for day tripping, exploring in the Sierras.
Well, as a Visit Lodi Tourism board member, we've witnessed that. I mean, we've had an explosion of Airbnbs, and we're building two new hotels in town. And so we have a lot of people that come. I would say that the vast majority of the people don't come here just to wine taste. They come for events, and they come just to be a tourist. And they spend 2 or 3 days here seeing all the amenities.
How far to get up to 49?
49 is literally 20 minutes away.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's the iconic gold route, right?
Yeah, I was just up at the Ironstone Winery, which is a little bit over an hour from here. Ironstone Winery has the largest gold nugget in the world at 522 carats. They have a history museum as well as a 1,100-acre campus, just gorgeous. But then there's also Greenhorn Resort and Angels Camp. So there's lots to do in the foothills, and it's really the old 49ers. I mean, you go up there and you literally could find a gold nugget just walking around.
I love it.
Yeah.
So when you look up towards the Sierras from here, can you see the peaks from on a clear day?
Absolutely. Yeah, during the winter on the clear days, you can see the snow caps very clearly, and you can sometimes see snow on Mount Diablo, so we have it on both sides. We used to have a lot of valley fog. We haven't had that in the last 15 or 20 years. I think we are having a little climate change. Thank goodness we're not having that dangerous fog, but it's those beautiful winter days are remarkable, and of course snow skiing is just an hour and a half away.
And what's the nearest ski resort?
Probably the most popular one is Bear Valley, which is about an hour and a half away. And then, of course, you have some smaller ones, Dodge Ridge down further. Even some of the close ones at Lake Tahoe, like Boreo Ridge, is only 2 hours away.
So. Not bad. You're pretty spoiled here, you know that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's why I'm not leaving.
All right, Wayne, thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to visit.
Now, where are we?
We're at Michael David Winery, home of the Seven Deadly Sins.
And This is, once again, like we talked about before, in some ways the birthplace of Lodi wine in a whole new iteration.
They are definitely one of our older wineries, a long time, you know, generational family that's been producing fruit and growing produce and making wine for years.
As a family, farmers, they were making produce and crops before they even got into wine, right?
Long before they got into wine. In fact, they started with a little roadside farm stand, and now we have all this.
It's a whole industry, a whole empire.
It is.
Mind-blowing, and in not that long time.
It isn't. It's amazing. I've been here 17 years, and I think I had shared that once they came out with the seven deadly sins, it just absolutely skyrocketed their business.
And not only that, but Lodi, whole new iteration, sure tailed off of that momentum.
They absolutely did. Lodi has been growing just by leaps and bounds recently in terms of the wine industry.
But in a real niche-specific way.
Oh, definitely.
We talked about before, I think Lodi grows 25% of California's grapes. Is that right?
I believe that we do, but I'm...
Anyway, but it's huge. I mean, you guys are also the largest AVA in California.
We are the largest appellation in the state of California, that's correct.
Historically, myself included, if you mentioned Lodi wine, I thought a grocery store wine.
You know, I think that back in the, you know, I think back in the early 2000s, there was that perception of Lodi as a jug wine region. And now, you know, as we've begun to produce these really artisanal wines, even branching out from some of the standard varietals and getting into some of the Mediterranean style varietals.
Things that people didn't know they could grow here.
Exactly. Huh? And they're getting so much recognition within the wine industry and awards. Has just literally changed the face of the Lodi wine industry.
Dig a little deeper. It's parallel universes, because to this day, if you buy a Gallo wine or a Mondavi in a grocery store, odds are huge that they are Lodi Appalachian grapes.
That's a good possibility, just because we are such a large appellation and we are growing so much. They're not necessarily being... the wine itself is not necessarily being produced here, but the grapes do come from our region. We sell a huge amount of wines, not just grapes, all across the United States.
A number of them head up to Napa and Sonoma.
All of those lovely Napa wines that people enjoy so much for years, decades. Those wines have been being produced with Lodi fruit. That was, you know, a good income for our grape growers before we began opening up all these wineries.
And remains an underpinning today.
It does. But again, it's not just here in California. We are selling our grapes across the nation, literally.
Shipped around.
We do. We also produce juice and ship the juice as well.
How cool. How many wineries are in Lodi Appalachian today?
We currently have about 85. And if you, you know, want to compare that, when I started my job here in 2001, we had about 8. So we've seen some phenomenal. We've got probably, maybe 60 of those with regular tasting room hours.
And looking forward, what's your sense? Where do you think number of wineries with tasting rooms, say, in 5 years from now?
It's going to continue to grow. We are probably adding somewhere in the neighborhood anywhere from, you know, let's just say average of, you know, 3 new wineries opening up a year. So I can easily see us growing.
It's a steady, you know, steady flow.
It's a steady, yes.
And what's interesting is your location. It still fascinates me. You know, I drive up and down Interstate 5 for decades, and yet how many of these cool places do we not have time to stop off the highway when we're en route to the Sierras or whatever? But it is, once you do, once you turn off, you're going, oh my gosh, within a mile or two of the interstate, here's whole other world.
We are perfectly situated between I-5 and Highway 99, and we literally have wineries in all four quadrants of Lodi, you know? So, like you said, people get right off the interstate, and we're right there. The other nice thing about Lodi for a visitor is that we really are very centrally located to so many other phenomenal things like San Francisco and Tahoe and Yosemite. So we're just a perfect hub and spoke destination. People can come.
And in reverse, even over to the coast where I live, totally drivable.
Yeah, great opportunity. So people, if they're, you know, if they want to come and taste some wine, they can do that, spend a couple of days, do some other activities, and then pop over to the next location.
Nancy, thanks for sharing. That's great.
You bet. Anytime.
My name is Melissa Phillips Stroud, and I'm VP of Sales and Marketing here at Michael David Winery.
We're in Lodi, California, at one of the wineries that really put Lodi on the map. Kind of snuck up on you guys, didn't it?
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere. You know, my father, David's my uncle. Mike had a passion and a dream. He was studying, was at UC Davis, studying for his undergrad, and he took some wine classes, started making wine in a garage, came back to the family farm to help out my grandfather, and my grandfather let him take over the old hay barn. So he started making wine there.
He's like mad scientist on the side, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He had old dairy tanks for his first fermenters that he got, you know, secondhand. He had some used beer fermenters, and that's what he was doing it. And so he bonded the winery. That was the 7th winery in Lodi at the time, and it was just small, making wine in the barn, selling it out of the fruit stand. Which we were a roadside fruit stand. We were growing tomatoes. We were able to eat some of those today. And, you know, people were coming here for their tomatoes and their watermelon. And he would just sell them some wine while he was at it.
And what I think, I just cracks me up, I love the story, is that your dad coming up with this cute name for the label is what made the wine.
Yeah, that was, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, 7 Deadly Zins. That was it. And
Isn't that crazy? Because it blew up on your guys. You didn't even know that this was going to go viral on you at all.
No, it's a 300,000 case brand. And that first vintage was the biggest single run he had ever done. He did 700 cases. And he sold out of the wine in 4 months. And Cost Plus World Market wanted to take it national. Mike and Dave said it was the best day and the worst day of their life. You know, they were so excited, and they were also, whoa, what did we just do here? Like, what's next?
And I seem to remember a couple years ago when I met your dad that he said off the record it was an oh my God wine. When he started doing it, it was just okay.
Yeah.
But it was the label that made it. And then for you guys, all of a sudden, now you got to ramp it up. And today it has become an oh my God wine as well as a killer label.
Well, that's what's interesting. You know, sometimes there's these kitschy labels, and, you know, as a brand gets bigger, their quality decreases. Ours has been
the opposite. I know.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know, the wine was solid, mm-hmm. but as he became better as a winemaker, and as we brought on additional support staff, and, you know, at this point, Mike and Dave are always on the road, so we have a fantastic winemaking team. The wine gets better every year, and, you know, we'll do run lines and try all the vintages, and you taste the wine get better each year.
It's interesting, too, from a marketing standpoint. You go to a liquor store, and you go to a wine shop, and you're just blinded by this array of different bottles. How do you stand out? If you had the most oh my God wine in the world, how would somebody just randomly know? And that's where in comes visual marketing.
Yes.
And that's where you guys to this day are just stellar. Tell us about the circus act over here.
Yeah, absolutely. This is our biggest hit right now, Freak Show. Mm-hmm. So it started with the Freak Show Cabernet. We also have a Freak Show Red, and we are just releasing the Freak Show Zinfandel.
But your dad was saying that the name alone, Freak Show, you know, and then the bizarre characters on the label, You've got my attention.
Yeah. You know, you need to get that attention off the shelf. You know, there's 1,000 wine labels. You go to the store, and this is what everyone in my family, we will go up and down the aisles and just pick and pull. What's this wine? Where is it from? How much does it cost? What grabs our attention?
Well, Yellowtail, classic story.
Exactly. Yes. Like, you need something. If you can get a consumer to pick up your bottle and read it, mm-hmm. you're, you know, 90% above your competitors. And that is where we've done really well, and we've succeeded. You know, our marketing is top-notch. It's high quality. It's eye-catching. It's fun. You know, you're drinking wine. It should be fun.
And it's great wine.
And it's great wine. And that's the reason for the continued success. Because they buy it one time because they like the label. They'll try it out. But they like what's inside. And we're true to what's in the bottle. And then they become fans for life.
Yeah. And paradoxically, because you're not Napa, you can do a retail price that's approachable and not going to make somebody choke. The same bottle would be 70 or 80, 90, identical wine if it had Napa or Sonoma on a label.
Absolutely. I mean, the grapes, you know, you're buying grapes in by the ton. And, you know, you're paying 2, 3, 4, 5 times as much for grapes in some of these other appellations like Napa. You know, Sonoma still, you know, it can be pricey and stuff as well. And in Lodi, you know, you get a very high quality, and it doesn't break the bank.
Right. In a paradoxical sense, again, Lodi-grown grapes sometimes are trucked out of here to Napa and Sonoma.
Oh, most definitely. There is, it's one of those kind of hidden things of the industry is, you know, 15% of the grapes from the juice that goes into your bottle of wine might be coming from a different appellation. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to be, 80, if it says Napa on it, it needs to be 85% from Napa. But that 15%, you bet your butt that they're bringing in grapes from Lodi and from other regions, just like we're bringing in 15% of juice from Napa and Sonoma.
In reverse,
because it's going to add a different complexity to our wines. So, you know, everyone does it, and it makes all of our wines better because you have different flavors that are coming from these different regions.
Very, very cool. Today, how many acres of grapes do you guys still produce, and how much do you source from other producers?
So we have over 1,200 acres as a family now, and that's about 50% of our overall grape needs.
Do you sell any of your grapes, or do you consume and produce all of them?
We keep all of our own grapes. We do bring in quite a few excess grapes. That way we're able to cherry pick. It's part of our business model so that, you know, if a vineyard got caught in rain that year, we're not short, and we can cherry pick. So some of our wine does, you know, we will sell off our lower end wine before we're doing our blend and goes to bottle. But for the most part, everything we're growing, we're keeping ourselves.
You grew up in the wine world. I mean, since you were a little girl, that's kind of an intrinsic part of your life, huh?
It is, but it's, you know, I didn't know any different, and it wasn't what it is today. You know, it was, you know, maybe my dad had a few barrels on the back of a truck that he was, you know, taking somewhere, or yeah, he drank wine at dinner, but it, you know, we would go and maybe work in the barn for a little bit, but it was just like somebody else might be out on a tractor, or, you know, I was raising rabbits with my grandma. Like, it was a small part growing up.
But today it's a big part.
I mean, it's
who
it's
you
my
are.
Life. Exactly. Yeah. It's a big part of who I am.
All right. Well, only because you got to get out to the winery, I got to let you go. But thank you so much for sharing.
No, of course. It's always a pleasure.
It was a delight. Somebody wanted to learn more. I know you got to have a website.
Yep, MichaelDavidWinery.com.
That's easy.
It's easy. And my name is Melissa Phillips Stroud, and I'm VP of Sales and Marketing here at Michael David Winery.
Melissa, once again, great to see you again. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Lodi, California. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.